You know, our theme text is 2 Peter 3:11. What manner of persons ought we to be in holy conversation, holy conduct, and godliness? And I was thinking, you know, just what is it that helps us or prevents us from being holy, having holy conduct, and being godly? And I was thinking that, you know, probably the biggest struggle we have is our own trials and our own temptations, the flesh, and how we interact and accomplish or fail in that particular process. So over the last year, I was assigned several different subjects to speak on, and that was a first for me. In 1 year, I was assigned multiples to different conventions, and I was laying in bed one night thinking, well, what is God trying to do here with this? And I realized that if we look at, what I realized is that what God is doing with us is that He's given us different sets of experiences, and we had three different assigned topics throughout the year, and this is the third of the three. Trials and temptations. Now, again, I apologize because our technology doesn't seem to be working here. So we're going to take a look at our trials and temptations from the aspect of James and then build upon that from there. So if you turn to James 1, verse 12, that's the key verse we're going to get to. But we're going to start with James 1, verse 1. So here we go. Okay, we're back. What I was saying was that one of the first services I was assigned was discerning God's will. And then at the general convention, the God of all comfort and trials and temptations, I was thinking, you know, really, that's our Christian walk. That's our Christian challenge, is how do we discern what God wants us to do? How do we deal with our trials and temptations? And how do we comfort and interact with one another? So that's the genesis, if you will, for this particular service today. So let's start with James 1, 1. James, a bondservant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes who are dispersed abroad. Greetings. Now pay attention to what James says in the next five verses, because he makes 5 points. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect results, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. But if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But he must ask in faith, without any doubting, for the one who doubts is like the surf of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For that man ought not to expect that he will receive anything from the Lord, being a double-minded man, unstable in all of his ways. So the five things that he's talking about here, James is bringing out to us, is one, is we will have experiences. Not if, but you will. We will. The second thing is that we want to get to the place in our spiritual development where we can find joy even in our trials and even in our experiences. The third thing he brings out is that we want to endure and persevere through the experience because it will make us more Christ-like. And the fourth thing is that if we're having difficulty in finding joy within each of our experiences, then we should ask our Father in heaven for the ability to discern the value and the reason for that particular experience. And then the last thing he reminds us is that when you ask for this wisdom, you must ask believing, not doubting. If you doubt, we should not expect to receive it. And that's like the individual who offers the word of prayer for rain. And I'll just take a farmer, for example, because rain many times, or a construction worker, means a lot to them, whether they work or don't work. So they pray for rain, and then they walk out the door. They don't take an umbrella or rain gear or anything along those lines. So did they really believe in their prayer? And that's the point James is making. If you ask the Lord for discernment, then you should believe that he's going to help reveal it to us. So that leads us to verse 12, and that's the conclusion James is making. And I'm going to read from the Phillips translation. I have the King James up there, but also the Phillips will pop in a second. It's the man who patiently endures the temptations and trials that come to him is the truly happy man. For once his testing is complete, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to all who love them. So when it comes to trials and temptations in our lives, several questions come to mind. What is God doing? Why are these experiences happening? And how can I be successful within my particular set of experiences? And I think if we really think about each of those three questions, what is God doing? Why are these experiences happening? And how can I be successful? We already have the answers. We already know the answers to these questions. But before we address these questions, let's back up and let's define what King James means by trials and temptations. Now, King James translates the word trial in the following different ways, trying and trial. And Thayer or Strong's definition says it's trustworthy, trial, trying, attesting, or by implication, trying. Nothing new there for us. And Thayer's continues and says that the testing of our faith produces endurance, and that which by something is tried or proved, the test. So trial has really the thought of a process, of an event or an experience, for the reason of revealing a truth. For the reason of revealing a truth. So, you know, why does God test us? Well, he wants to test us to see what we're made of or what we're not made of. So let's briefly look at the word temptation. In the biblical usage, it means it's an experiment, a tempt, a trial, or a proving, and proving the trial made of you by my bodily condition. And it's also referring to a trial of man's fidelity or integrity, their virtue, their constancy. A temptation trial can also refer to a temptation to sin, an enticement to sin, whether arising from inward or outward circumstances or proclivities. And the trial of a man's fidelity, integrating integrity, virtue, it's a mental state by which we are enticed to sin or to a lapse from our faith and holiness. Temptation can also be adversity, affliction. So what we're seeing is there is a wide usage of the word temptation. And they even say in the scriptures it's used as if it's a trial or a temptation from God or from men. But this is what Peter says in 1 Peter 4:12. And he uses for the King James the word trial or temptation. He uses the word try. And beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you as though some strange thing happened. Now notice also how it's used in 2 Corinthians 10:13. There is no temptation taking you, but such as is common to man. But God was faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape. Now these are all verses that we're probably very familiar with. So we have read in James 1 through 8 and then verse 12, but let's continue on with the point James is making in verse 13. Let no man say when he is tempted, don't let him say, I am tempted of God. You know, the end of quotation. Because God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempts he any man. So when we think that, okay, I'm having this experience and it's God directed, that's probably only half the truth. Yes, it's under God's domain and care, but it's not God originated. So it's God directed, but not God originated. So we're really not tempted by God. Verse 14, but every man is tempted when he's drawn away of his own lust and enticed. And then as a result of that temptation, when lust has conceived, he brings forth sin. And sin, when it's finished, brings forth death. So the distinction is that temptation is the thought of an intention to failure. And that might come from the world, the adversary, the flesh. And they all tempt us with the intention that we'll miss the mark. Satan doesn't want us to succeed. The world doesn't want us to succeed. And sometimes we trip our own selves up because we love to sin, honestly. We sin because many times the sin is pleasurable. And so we fall into it. So God allows Satan, the world, and our own flesh to tempt us. But he directs it. He overrules it for our good. That's why I use the expression as God directed, not God originated. So the difference then is that God takes a temptation, an experience that's intended to be harmful for us, and he uses it for our betterment, making it into a trial to see whether or not we have what it takes to become set in righteousness and truth. So the adversary, you know, it's kind of like a martial arts thing. The adversary throws a punch and God deflects it and says, I'm going to use it for your good. The flesh throws a punch at us and God deflects it and says, I'm going to use it for your good. Now, we still might reap the consequences of our decision. But God's trying to use it to teach us about ourselves. And if we learn about ourselves, then if we learn how to deal with our own sin, then we begin to understand how we can help others deal with theirs. So God takes that temptation and directs it accordingly. And so that leads us to our three deferred questions. What is God doing? Why are these experiences happening? And how can I become successful within my experiences? And perhaps these questions are the thought process we had or currently have when we are in an experience. What is God doing? Why is this happening to me? And how can I be successful? And if we can go through that thought process, I think our success rate will go much higher. I think we get caught up in the flesh or the experience and we don't really take that minute or second even just to think about what this experience is for or why. And so we react, and many times it's we react in the wrong way. So, what is God doing with us or with me? Well, we know what He's doing. We already know that. He's making us into the image of His Son. We have Colossians 1:27, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. A transformative process. We have Romans 12:1-2. Romans 12:1-2. And just to emphasize that, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed towards the bottom of the slide. He's helping us to change from mortality to immortality. 1 Corinthians 15. We must put on incorruption and we must put on immortality. I'm going to skip ahead just a little bit. So why are we having these experiences? Well, the answer is, and I think we all know that, is because there is no other better way for God to work with us than through the experiences He gives us. And so what is the purpose of our transformation? Well, ideally, it's to bring us as a member of Christ's body. But it's also to bring honor and glory to Him. My Father is glorified by this, John 15:8, that you bear much fruit, and so you prove to be my disciples. So we know that these opportunities are a trial of our faith. And many times we read some of the verses, standalone verses. So I'm going to take two standalone verses, I'm going to put them together as one verse. We're going to take 1 Peter 4:12 and 1 Peter 1:7, out of order contextually, but the thought is a continuity. So let's read that as one verse. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial, which is a trial, as though some strange thing happened unto you. And we should do that so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in peace and praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Now, when you're reading the King James Version, and I don't know how many still use the King James, but King James never uses the word trial in the plural. It's always singular, trial. And that's because we really only have one trial of our faith. There is only one trial. Now, we might have many different opportunities and many different experiences. Much like if you take a college course, you go through many different chapters, but the course has one purpose, to train you in this particular field of knowledge. So, we often use the expression trials, but there is really only one trial. Many facets, many components, but only one. And our experience opportunities are to see how much of the fruit of the Holy Spirit we possess. And by the way, the fruit of the Spirit is singular. And we always say fruits of the Spirit, but it's only one fruit. Many facets, but only one fruit. And our trial is really about growing this fruit. Fruit's the desired crop. Growth is the process to this crop. And our trial not only verifies the quality of the crop that we produce, but it helps in the growth process itself. And as we change for the better, our thought processes, our perspective, our behavior, and our self-control, as we improve those, we are enabling the fruitage of character development. Now, I mentioned our trial is one test composed of many different facets or sections, and each of them covering different areas. And I came across the discourse by Brother Paul Molly in 1970. And in that service, he makes the point that there is four areas of testing that we go through. We go through truth, service, sacrifice, and character. And the fifth one there I added because I thought, you know, he didn't really cover those four. And so we have experiences in how we love or don't love as well. And he also made the point that if this premise is true, then our experiences are, should be categorized into one of those five different areas. So you could take a look at your experience and place it into one of those five categories. So what would an experience of truth be like, or a test of truth be like? Well, it might be something to see if we believe God's word is the source of truth and that we live and conduct our lives accordingly. Just as simple as that. I read something in the scriptures and I'm doing a behavior that the scriptures say we should not do, or I'm not doing a behavior that the scriptures say that I should be doing. Do I make a change? That's a test. Do I serve? Do I serve each other? And how well I deal with disagreement? And to see whether or not we continue meeting together even when disagreements arise. Some brethren can't deal with conflict, and so the resolution is to separate. I'm not saying separation's wrong, but separation's the last thing to do. You have experiences along sacrifice. Do we stop sacrificing when our efforts aren't acknowledged or aren't appreciated? Okay, so maybe the flesh comes up and says, okay, so I did all this work and now you didn't get a thank you out of it. next year I'm not going to volunteer. You ever have that thought process? How about a test of character? How well we do under provocation and confrontation? What happens when we're in traffic and the light has changed and the person in front of us is still sitting on their phone and the car is next to you and driving by and you're still sitting there waiting for this person to acknowledge the light? How well do we do under provocation and confrontation? And then the test of love. You know, we understand that our trial experiences can sometimes put us into the furnace, if you will. And the furnace is basically just a metaphor for heat. Well, you know, there's different levels of heat, but heat itself has a practicality to it. So I can use heat to melt a candle. I can use heat to melt candy. I can use heat to temper or fire a brick. And I can use heat to cast steel. And I can use heat to destroy steel as well. So how we apply these tests to ourselves individually is up to you. But you can't stop it. You have to think about, are we having ecclesia experiences? Are we having experiences along these lines as a body of Christ within our whole fellowship? So that leads up to the question then, how can we be successful in them? And we'd like to suggest three major areas for consideration. First, we change the way we look at things. Change our perspective. Secondly, we change the way we think. And then lastly, we address the sin in our lives. So let's look at the change our perspective. Now, I had a life metaphor, and I came to realize that my metaphor was wrong. And I used the analogy in my own metaphor of Christ first, and I began to realize that it was totally wrong, and I really need to focus on Christ-centered. And then I also had an epiphany, if you will, about two words, vertical and horizontal. And I'm going to share those briefly. My metaphor was the balance scale, and I put Christ first on it, and so it tipped the balance this way. And then I had to throw all these different things on there. I had all these different areas of responsibilities. The world record for juggling is 8 items for 1 iteration. That's the world record for juggling. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Right? Now we deal with all of those every day in some form or fashion. So what I found was that I was, instead of being Christ heavy, Christ first, it was Christ last, because all of these were circumventing this. And I struggled emotionally trying to figure out, okay, now how can I deal with this? And I began to resent the time that I was spending here because I really wanted to be spending it over there. I began to realize that this whole metaphor was improper, wrong. Throw it away. It was not a valid metaphor. Instead, I thought, what happens if I take and move Christ into the center of every one of my areas of responsibility? You know, I knew that all my life, my Christian life, but it never resonated with me until I really thought through what that meant. Instead of worrying about how I'm interacting with my friends, what happens if I bring Christ into my friendships? What happens if I bring Christ into my career? What happens if I bring Christ into my finances, my personal, my health, my spiritual growth, my family? Two things happened for me. One was I found peace, because it wasn't in this conflict all the time. And secondly, my opportunities to witness and share significantly increased, because I was looking for a way to reflect Christ in everything that I was doing. And I can't tell you the number of times, so actually I can, but many times I've gone to the doctors, I'm sitting there in my underwear for the examination, and we're talking, and she gets up and she gives me 3 or 4 hugs. Because I just touched an area of her life trying to represent Christ to her. I went to the eye doctor. It was a 15-minute appointment. I was there 1 hour and 15 minutes talking about Christ. Because I was trying to find a way to put Him in the center and not Him versus all these other things like I had before. So change the way you think. Perspective. Change your perspective. The second thing I learned was I had to start thinking horizontally. Instead, I had to stop thinking horizontally. And I had to start thinking vertically. Now, what does that mean? So I realized that I needed a thought change process when I was studying the 12 tribes of Israel. And you're very familiar with the account. They come back from the nation of, you know, the land of Canaan. And they are asked a question. 12 representatives go in. They spend 40 days there. 12 representatives come back. Moses says, "What's your report?" 10 of them made a comparison. 10 of them compared God, I'm sorry, 10 of them compared the Israelites to the Canaanites. And they were absolutely correct. The Canaanites had land, they had defenses, they had walled cities, they had resources, and they were used to defending themselves. The Israelites, coming out of Egypt, were a vassal nation. They had none of those things. Two of them compared God to the Canaanites. And he said, yes, that all might be true, but God promised us this land. What are we waiting for? Let's move. Now, I began to think about that. I wondered, now, how can I tell when I'm thinking vertically versus horizontally? And I began to realize that I was like the Canaanites and the Israelites. And for me, the trigger was the personal pronoun, I. How am I going to deal? How am I going to deal with this particular situation? What am I going to do in this circumstance? I was thinking horizontally. And I began to realize that I really not what you need to say is, what is God going to do with the promises he's already made with me in this particular circumstance? Now, I'm not saying that I'm not responsible for living my life and making my decisions. But what I'm saying is that I was trying to solve my problems and not letting God work with me to help me solve my problems or my opportunities, whatever they were. So for me, I had to change my perspective. I had to change my metaphor, and I had to change the way I looked at circumstances in my life. So that's the perspective change. Well, how do we change our thinking process? Well, we'd like to talk about our comfort zones and actually putting our faith over our fear. So let's talk about comfort zones. All right. So our comfort zone is however big we want to make it. And that represents us in the center. And we have a human propensity that says, I will always center myself in my comfort zone. And I have this buffer. And when I get pushed out to the outside, I'm not as comfortable. And so God is dealing with me to move me out to the outside edges, because the second propensity kicks in with the human character is that if I decide to stay where God is leading me, my natural propensity is to increase my comfort zone because I'm going to center myself again. Now, most of us, if you're anything like me, we resist that movement there because guess what? It's uncomfortable. That's why we call this our zone of comfort. It's very uncomfortable the closer we get to here. But if we use these experiences and we stay where God is leading us, then the flesh says, okay, if I have to stay, if I decide to stay there, then I am going to do this. You know what that area is called right here? It's called growth. By deciding to stay where God is pushing me, leading me, I will grow. But I have to make that decision to stay there. Otherwise, if I retreat, my comfort zone retreats accordingly. Okay? So that's how we can be successful in our experiences. Now, the last one is faith over fear. And it took me a long time to learn this. Very simple. That's all it is. Play my faith over my fear. If I don't, this is what's going to happen. My fear will consume me. So I have a prop, but I'm not going to light it up because I'm under a smoke detector. Where'd it go? Oh, here it is. Okay, so let's just use your imagination. Bear with me. If I took a match and lit this candle up, well, I'm going to have heat and smoke. But the point is, think of this candle as being our life, all right? And I've dedicated my life to serving God. So fear comes along, and I light it up, and that fear starts to consume this candle. Well, there's a major problem with that, because first of all, if I don't put that fear out, it's going to consume the candle. And secondly, this candle doesn't belong to fear, it belongs to God. So I'm letting fear destroy the very thing that I've given to God himself. So it behooves me to learn how to put out this candle as fast as possible. Now, there's different techniques. I can claim a scripture, I can claim a promise, I can kneel in prayer, I can say a breath prayer. It doesn't matter what the technique is. What matters is that you learn multiple techniques and you apply the technique. So if this was lit, I could pinch it out, I could clap it out, I could blow it out, I could snuff it out. It doesn't matter. I have to make the conscious decision to place my faith over my fear. Now, what has that got to do with thinking vertically and horizontally? I think it's tied together. If I let this fear go because I don't know what the circumstances are going to be, I don't know, I'm not certain, I'm not sure, then I'm thinking horizontally. If I trust that God's in the middle of my experiences and God has promised me, when I feel that fear coming up inside of me, big or small, if I don't put it out, it's going to continue to grow. And just acknowledging that our Father in heaven has promised us His care over our lives. Now, you know, I checked a bag here today or yesterday to fly out here. And I know some of us won't check bags because we don't trust the airline with our luggage. And it's kind of ironic that we trust them with our lives, but we don't trust them with our luggage. Right? So the wise traveler packs a change of clothes on their carry-ons, right? So if they check luggage, okay. But the point is, are we like that with God, our Father in heaven? We trust Him with our lives. We say, you know what? You can't have this area of my life. That's mine. You cannot have it. It's mine. So I will carry it on because I don't trust You with it. I think for some of us, in different circumstances, all of us, that's probably very true. We have to acknowledge that, okay, I am protecting this area, but I really promised it to You. And if I really believe that You are caring and watching over me, then I will give that back to You. And when I do, I might be fearful because of that decision, because I'm being pushed to my comfort zone. You see, all these are interacting and tying together. I don't want to do it because it's not my comfort zone. And my fear is picking up. But when I do, my comfort zone increases because I've learned to trust Him. I've learned to put my faith over my fear. And you know, when we exercise, our muscles get stronger, plain and simple. So when we push ourselves out to the comfort zones, when we put our faith over our fear, when we start thinking vertically instead of horizontally, when we learn to put our faith over our fear, we are doing what our theme verse is telling us, to become godly. Okay. So there's one more aspect, if we have a little time, we'll talk about, and that's overcoming sin. So we've got about 10 minutes. Well, each of us overcomes sin differently, sometimes more or less successfully, depending upon the circumstances. It basically comes down to, you know, perhaps you've heard the saying, if there is the strongest one usually wins in a fight. So if the spirit and the flesh are fighting and at war with each other, the strongest one's going to win. And who gets the most training and who gets the best food generally is the determination of who's going to win. So if I feed my flesh and I train my flesh, when it encounters the spirit doesn't have much of a chance. When I train my spirit and strengthen my spirit to face my fear, push out of my comfort zones, trust God, then the flesh doesn't have much of a chance. But it comes down to, what am I going to do? And if I can learn how to deal with this, then perhaps I can share and model to others how to do that too. So if you'd like to have this whole 12 minutes in three verses, it's Ephesians 4, verses 22, 23, and 24. But put off the old self, renew in the spirit of your mind, and put on the new self. And that's basically what it is. We make a conscious decision, we commit to that decision, and we strengthen it, and then we start living it. We start acting like a son of God. We start behaving like a son of God. We start thinking like a son of God. And when the flesh creeps up, and it will, and it does, we have to decide, am I going to think vertically? Am I going to think horizontally? Am I going to put my faith over my fear? Am I going to let God lead me to the edges of my comfort zone? And sometimes in that leading, God uses a series of events. So let me share with you just real simply the account of Joseph in Egypt. So Joseph is the favored son of his father. He gives him a coat of many colors. That coat becomes a visible sign of the love that his father has for Jacob. His brothers become jealous. They decide to kill initially. Reuben steps in and says, don't kill the boy. And Reuben walks away so that he's not privy with that decision, expecting to come back and rescue Joseph. They sell Joseph to the slave caravan. They go back to their dad, and they use that coat. Second time, coats with Joseph. First time his father gives him one. Second time his brothers use that coat against him. He goes down into Egypt. He becomes a slave, sold, comes into the house, Potiphar's wife. Has an eye for him, She wants him to commit immoral behaviors, and he refuses. He holds the higher ground. And she corners him, catches him in a situation where his only escape is to literally escape. So he does, but he leaves his coat behind to do so. She takes that coat and uses it against him. See, the man you put in charge of this household tried to rape me. Here's proof. So Joseph gets put in prison. Over time, he reveals himself to his brothers. Do you know what he gave his brothers when they came down into Egypt and he revealed himself to them? Coats. Joseph learned that God was dealing with him with coats. And coats was one of the ways that it was a visible evidence of God's dealing in Joseph's life. His father's coat used against him. The coat he had in was used against him under Potiphar's wife. So when his brothers come, the very thing that they used against him, he blesses them with. Coats. So, put on the new self. Now, all this ties back to these four things. Change the way you think, change your perspective. And if we do those things, then we start to become successful in our overcoming of our sin. Okay, I'm going to skip through a bunch of verses here. Ephesians 4:24. So, I guess my time's up. So what we want to do is concentrate on the positive and take the old behaviors and replace them with the new behavior. So, you know, I used to do this. Now I no longer just choose to do that. I'm going to do this instead. I'm going to serve God in whatever capacity. I'm going to serve the brethren. I'm going to volunteer for opportunities. I'm going to find ways to say yes when I'm asked to do something instead of finding a way to say no. And, you know, we've heard the expression, well, my plate's really full. It's too full. So we use that as an excuse. We also know that if we were better with our time management, our plate wouldn't be so full. And we also know that those who are very successful at doing a lot of things, I'm not saying concurrently, but getting a lot of things accomplished, do so because they manage their time, but they also expect that the Lord's going to bless the circumstances and the work. And so they don't feel that they have to do it. They feel that they're partnering up with God to get it accomplished. And so it's no longer my sole responsibility to get it done. I'm going to help God to get it done. I'm going to stop and watch and see how He works, because He works far better, far more efficient, far more faster, and far more globally than I would ever be able to work. Bless and not curse. When you interact with individuals, do they walk away from you saying, well, I don't know what that individual has, but there's something there that I want? Do they walk away discouraged? Do you suck the life out of them? Or do you encourage them and bless them in some way? So bless and not curse. Every interaction we have with someone, we should be able to walk away, or the goal should be that they walk away from us saying, that was really something. I learned something. And we start thinking in those lines, the aspect of fellowship, the dynamic of fellowship changes. It's no longer about, hi, how are you doing? It's good to see you. Thank you for coming to our convention. That's really not fellowship. That's a greeting. You want to start a good conversation that's deep? Ask them if they're growing spiritually. Ask them how the Lord has blessed you this last week. Ask them how are you using the blessings of your life to benefit others? And be prepared to answer that question for yourself. And you see, now it's not about what's the weather like, how are the crops doing, how's the job circumstances going, right? It's much more than that. Now, all those other things might impact and have an influence on us, but it's much greater than that. And fellowship really becomes this uniting thing that we don't have if we stay at the superficial level of the weather, politics, etc. So, what is God doing? Why are these experiences happening? And how can I become successful in them? Well, we know what God is doing. He's transforming our lives, plain and simple. We know that we have these experiences because there is no better way to do this than the way God is choosing to do it in our lives. There's no better way. Otherwise, He'd be doing it. And how can we become successful? We embrace change. For spiritual reasons. Change the way we look at things. Perspective. Change the way we think about things. So, if there be any virtue and there be any praise, think on these things. So when we look at the theme verse for today, since all these things are to be destroyed in this way, what sort of persons ought we to be in holy conversation and God?